This is the story of Bill and Jen, who sold their home the easy way with Easy Property. They'd seen their dream home.
But we need to sell ours.
Luckily, they found Easy Property and booked a free valuation online. Then with a knock, they were visited by their local property professional.
Hello.
Who valued their home and explained the choice of packages from £295. And with the online dashboard, they could respond to offers.
We've got an offer.
That's another easy ever after. Find yours and book a free valuation with your local property professional at easyproperty.com.
Wednesday, September 13th, 2017, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, we release a new sports podcast every single week. Try to bring you some humor. Try to bring you some common sense. Every once in a while, we may look back at some sports history. We basically try to bring you something that you won't get anywhere else. If you're sick of the same dumb first take sports talk, then you're going to like it a lot better here at the Daily Dose. There are a couple of ways that you can participate in the show. You can go check out new articles. You can go check out a link to the podcast every single week if you just head over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com. Have you been over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com lately? Well, why not? Get over there. We've had NFL previews going up the last few weeks. Been hitting each and every division. We went through college football. There are a number of new articles up over at dailydosesports.wordpress.com. Make sure you go check that out. But if you've got a question, maybe you have a comment, maybe you need some advice about something, or maybe there's just something you would like to contribute to the show about any subject, feel free to hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or find us over on Twitter or Facebook. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. That is D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. We would love to hear from you and get some of your thoughts. Today on the show, you know, we now have some NFL football. We now have college football. How awesome was it to have both over the weekend? I'm not going to lie. I didn't get a whole lot done over this past weekend, and it was amazing. I want to talk a little today about what we saw in that first full weekend of football. What did we learn? And what is everyone overreacting about? You just know that the sports media world, they love to go crazy over things. Plus, this coming Saturday, we do have the middleweight championship of the world between Gennady Golovkin and Canelo Alvarez. We'll give you a few things to look for in that fight. And as usual, you have to make sure that you stick around for our Daily Dose Top 5. Always a very popular segment on the show. Like we've told you before, the top five, it's got a mind of its own. It might be a serious top five. It could be like a historic top five. It might be insightful. It might be completely ludicrous. I'll be honest, I just try to do my best, hold on for dear life, and bring you the Daily Dose top five. So make sure that you don't miss that this week. Now, just real briefly, before we get to all of the football that we do have today, we should probably discuss a new rule change that is being discussed by the NBA right now to stop teams from tanking for top draft picks. You know, under the current rule, the team with the worst record gets the most ping pong balls in the NBA draft lottery, right? Of course, we've seen team after team take advantage of this rule. They're intentionally losing in hopes of getting that next great superstar. Now, the new proposal that the NBA is bringing up would drop the worst team to the sixth spot, allow three teams the same number of ping pong balls, and no team could get the top pick in consecutive seasons. Once again, the guys in the boardrooms aren't getting it right. Like, it sounds great in that boardroom sitting around the table. What if we just move the top guy down to six? Wouldn't that get rid of it? No, it wouldn't. And it's kind of stupid. Do you think dropping a team to sixth changes anything? Here's a question. What if a team is actually bad? Then how can they possibly get better? This proposal that's on the table for the NBA, it makes no sense. It fixes nothing. The problem here, let's just get this on the table. The problem is that the NBA is a corrupt league. No, wait. Hear me out. This league has teams that are trying to lose. And it's not new. It's not like this is something brand new. It's been around for a while. If teams are intentionally trying to lose to garner a better pick, you're getting dangerously close to becoming a fixed league. Remember what I've told you in the past. It's all fun and games until Vegas takes a hit. And then someone's getting their kneecap shattered. The NBA does have a tanking problem that needs to be fixed. This proposal they're talking about doesn't fix it. You want to fix it? It's not that hard. Get rid of the protected picks. Get rid of all that nonsense and these trades. Well, if we trade and he plays this amount of minutes, then it's a protected pick. But if he doesn't, it's not a pick. Get rid of all that garbage. That needs to go away. Get rid of all that. And then lock in draft position by playoff elimination date. And after that, just start finding teams for intentionally losing. It's not that hard, people. I mean, I'm just a guy out here in Denver, Colorado. I can figure that out. I know the big smart people out in the NBA. They're having meetings and lectures and discussions about this. They can't figure that out. But otherwise, the NBA is running a risk of getting that league into some serious trouble. Because like I said, it's all fun and games until Vegas starts losing money. And it's going to stop. It's going to go away really, really quickly. They do need to address it. They just need to be smarter about it. Okay, forget basketball. It's not basketball season. It's football season. And week one of the NFL season is in the books. And like we're apt to do, sports media is jumping all over stories that honestly don't make the most amount of sense. And I can't blame them. Hey, they're getting paid based on you consuming it. So if sports media can be sensational and you click on it or you watch it or you read it, then they make more money. But some of the stuff they're putting out, it doesn't even matter. Sorry. I mean, we can pretend that it does. We can get all excited. We can have arguments. We can yell at each other. But sometimes you've kind of got to sift through what's real and factual and what is just hype nonsense. And of course, we here at The Daily Dose, we're in the business of helping people. We're in the business of solving problems. So we're going to do the heavy lifting for you and tell you what actually means anything and what is just an overreaction. Here's a few overreactions from the NFL week one. First overreaction. Hey, we can just bury the New England Patriots. They are done. The Patriots, of course, got blown out at home 42-27. And while, you know, last week on the show, Larry and I both said the Patriots are very beatable, it's kind of hard to tell. Was that good Chiefs or bad Patriots? Like, I was struggling. I think it was a little both. But here's the one thing that I noticed. Told you this before. I'm always looking for body language. As a former coach, you're just always trying to read your players. You're always trying to read opposing coaches. You're even trying to read the players and coaches on your own staff. Did you happen to notice Bill Belichick as the final gun sounded on that game against the Chiefs and he took off his headset? Did you see his face? Because his face said, hey, I told you guys. See, I told you. I wasn't making this up. Here's the thing. Remember back in the offseason when the Patriots were going out and signing all these new players and making trades and making deals? They got tight end Dwayne Allen, wide receiver Brandon Cooks, defensive end Coney Ealy. They went and got running back Mike Gillisley, cornerback Stephon Gilmore. And what did everyone say when that happened? Man, do you see what the Patriots are doing? They're loading up to get even better in 2017. This team might go undefeated. Remember, we talked about this a little bit last week. Great comebacks hide flaws in your team. Believe me, I know more than anyone having watched John Elway's career. There were a lot of comebacks he had to engineer because the team was so flawed, he had to cover for it in the last 2 minutes. So a lot of times, those great comebacks, they look awesome. They hide some major, major flaws in your team. Like, we forget how bad the Patriots looked in the first three quarters of the Super Bowl, don't we? They didn't look very good. Tom Brady wasn't very sharp. We forget they didn't have much of a pass rush. We forget they were all but out of receivers to throw to. And we forget that they struggled at times to protect Tom Brady. They didn't have any kind of a running game. All that stuff kind of goes out the window. No, did you see the Patriots? Tom Brady's the greatest player ever. Tom Brady led the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. This is the greatest team that's ever existed. No, it's not. The Patriots got hot in the Super Bowl. They rode the momentum. And let's be honest, the Atlanta Falcons did everything in their power to help the cause. But the Patriots do have some flaws. And we saw those flaws on Thursday night against the Kansas City Chiefs. They don't get much pressure on the quarterback. With Julian Edelman out, they have even less receivers. And just a brief side note, where was Gronk? Like, I didn't even know if he was active for the game. Was he out there? I saw the one play, and like, that was it. So that's why Bill Belichick had that look. He's going, I told you we weren't that good. We are beatable, and none of you believed me. And you know what? He's right. They are beatable. Having said that, no one is better at in-season adjustments than Bill Belichick. So don't bury the Patriots just yet. You watch. Bill Belichick will revamp that defense. He might start using unorthodox blitzes to generate some pressure. He'll probably start using what weapons he does have on offense to move the chains, and he'll start doing some weird things on offense. You watch. That's just what he does. I honestly think Bill Belichick may be the best coach in history at playing the hand that he's dealt and making the adjustments to use that hand to beat you. So don't count out the Patriots just yet. Yes, they're beatable. He'll fix some things. You watch. Now, on the other side of that overreaction was the immediate overreaction of, hey, Kansas City Chiefs are probably the best team in football, aren't they? I mean, they beat the team that was going to go undefeated and beat them pretty well. So they're like probably the best team now, right? Well, no. No, not yet. Slow down. For starters, safety Eric Berry is gone. You want to know why Rob Gronkowski was invisible on Thursday night? Look no further than Eric Berry. Dude had him covered like a blanket the entire night. Berry is now gone for the year with a blown Achilles. That's going to hurt. So Berry's out, but tight end Travis Kelce is not out, and that doesn't help either. Hey, I'm not saying Travis Kelce isn't talented. He is. It's just he always seems like he's a stupid penalty away from costing the Chiefs a game. It's coming. It's been close before. It's going to happen. And while I realize that Alex Smith was amazing last Thursday, we can all look at that and say, well, hey, drafting Patrick Mahomes really got Alex Smith going. He has a little bit of history doing that. Out in San Francisco, when they brought in Colin Kaepernick, Alex Smith actually raised his game a little bit. So maybe that's going to happen. But we've been watching him play in this league for 11 seasons now. Competent? Yes. Underrated? Probably. But he is and always has been a very, very conservative quarterback. That's proven. And again, the Patriots looked really bad. They didn't have any energy. They didn't have any pass rush. So I'm not saying that the Chiefs aren't a contender. I'm saying let's see a little more from the Chiefs before we go ahead and pencil them into Super Bowl 52. Let's, I don't know, maybe see how they do in like a divisional game first. It was one game against a team that didn't look very good. So I'm not putting the Chiefs in the Super Bowl just yet. Okay, here's a few more overreactions that I have. The Atlanta Falcons look like they've avoided the dreaded Super Bowl slump, right? I mean, they beat the Chicago Bears on the road on Sunday. And they had to battle a little bit for it. It wasn't easy. That's a really good sign, isn't it? No. No, it probably isn't. Because if I'm an Atlanta fan, that game on Sunday scared me even more. Hey, Chicago's not very good. And Mike Glennon basically battled MVP Matt Ryan to a stalemate. The Bears had 4 tries from the Falcons' 5-yard line and couldn't score. So this may be more about the Bears being inept, but if I'm a Falcons fan, I don't feel very good after that week 1 game. Not that they can't overcome all that. They didn't look very good on Sunday. I'd still be worried about the Super Bowl slump if I'm Atlanta. Here's another kind of hot take that's getting thrown around a lot. You know, the Jacksonville Jaguars, they might be pretty good. They scored 29 points on a very good Houston Texans defense. And their defense was outstanding. I mean, they had like the fearsome foursome up there. Did you see the Jaguars defense? This team is going to run the football with Leonard Fournette and head coach Doug Marrone. Hey, he's got this group playing tough defense. They are scrappy. Well, maybe, but I kind of doubt it. See, quarterback Blake Bortles, yeah, he was still pretty average. He threw for just 125 yards. Now, Fournette was good. He picked up 100 yards. But the key to this game had nothing to do with that. The key to this game was the 4 turnovers by Houston. Quarterback Tom Savage was dreadful. He was 7 of 13 for 63 yards. He fumbled twice. So they replace him with rookie Deshaun Watson. Watson, I guess, generated a little bit of offense, but hey, he wasn't much better. He fumbled once. He threw an interception. The bottom line for Houston was that their offensive line was so bad, it doesn't matter who plays quarterback for them. Now, here's what's going to happen with Jacksonville. Teams are going to load up for Fournette, and they're going to dare Blake Bortles to beat him. Based on what we've seen in the past, I don't think that's going to happen. Leonard Fournette's going to have to carry the ball like 500 times this season for the Jaguars to truly be a contender. I don't think that's going to happen either. He has a track history of not staying healthy. Oh, and also, the Jaguars lost wide receiver Allen Robinson for the season with a blown knee. So, I mean, as long as you don't turn the ball over 4 times, yeah, you're probably still going to beat the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I know it's a hot take to call the Jacksonville Jaguars a surprise team from week 1. Yeah, surprise. they still suck. Hey, it is easy to call the Pittsburgh Steelers overrated after week one. I mean, they struggled to beat the Cleveland Browns. Their offense struggled all day. Le'Veon Bell managed just 32 yards rushing on 10 carries. And the Pittsburgh Steelers had only 290 total yards. That's not good for a team that is supposed to be a contender in the AFC. And you know, their offense is what is supposed to carry them. Yes, they beat the Cleveland Browns 21-18, but they couldn't score any points in the fourth quarter. And their defense, I think it still could be a problem. The Steelers were holding on for dear life on Sunday, but I'm going to say something right now that is going to sound crazy. Don't stop the podcast. Don't delete the podcast. I'm going to back it up with a couple of facts. The Cleveland Browns are not horrible. No, I know. It's shocking, but their defense is getting better. And rookie quarterback DeShone Kizer had some bright spots on Sunday. Now, he also had some dumb spots, and he better learn how to avoid a hit real quick, or he's not going to make it to week three. But the Browns are slowly becoming at least competitive. Plus, here's the biggest thing with the Browns and the Steelers. This is a divisional game. These teams already know each other. They know their tendencies. They know their plays. They can probably call their plays as they're calling them out in the huddle. They already know what they're going to see. On top of that, Cleveland had like 3 months of preparing for this game. So not only do they know the team anyways, they had another 3 months. As soon as they got the schedule, they knew they were going to be facing the Pittsburgh Steelers in week one. So I know it's easy to call the Steelers overrated. Are they really going to be a contender in the AFC? I still think the Steelers can be a contender. I do still worry about that defense, but they'll still be a contender. Hey, give the Browns a little bit of credit. Like I said, they're getting better, and they really know how to play the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, we got a few overreactions on Monday night, didn't we? Now, the second game, we got kind of a weird overreaction in that game. If you didn't see it, the Denver Broncos led the Los Angeles Chargers. Yeah, that's still hard to say that. Even the ref screwed that up once. He called them the San Diego Chargers. Anyways, the Denver Broncos led the Los Angeles Chargers 24-7 in the fourth quarter when they committed two quick turnovers. And the Chargers capitalized right on top of them. Like, as soon as they got the ball, one was kind of a fluky, weird interception. They went and scored. The next was a fumble by running back Jamal Charles. They went and scored. The Chargers scored two touchdowns in a minute and 10 seconds. In 70 seconds, the game went from 24-7 to 24-21. And the Chargers actually got the ball back late in the game with seconds remaining. The Chargers lined up for a field goal that would tie it and send it into overtime. They made the kick. Unfortunately for them, Broncos head coach Vance Joseph had called timeout, so they kicked it again, and on the re-kick, we got this outcome instead from ESPN.
They put 5 seconds back on the clock for Coon. Second time, and it is no good!
It's blocked here. Let's see who gets a hand on it.
Shelby Harris got a piece of it!
So then the reaction from most of the media on Tuesday was, hey, you know, if the Chargers can play like they did in the fourth quarter when they outscored Denver 14-0, they could be a contender. Yeah, no, I mean, I guess that's true. If you can cause multiple turnovers and you can score in a matter of seconds, no, I think you're going to be pretty good. Couldn't we say that about literally anyone in the entire league? Like, hey, if the Browns cause turnovers and they score on the next play, no, they're going to be pretty good. Yeah, you're right. The Philadelphia 76ers. They get turnovers and score right away. Yeah, they're going to be pretty good too. Like, pick a team. Pick a sport. Makes no difference. Aren't you almost saying, I don't know if I understand this whole thing, but if the Chargers score more points than their opponent, they're going to win some games. Yeah, it's a brilliant take. Glad we have you on ESPN to tell us that. Excellent. Come on now. You're better than that, sports media. Plus, don't we all know that Philip Rivers leads the NFL in gutsy losses? Like, you know it's coming. Every year, we think, hey, this might be the year. Every year, it's just another gutsy loss for Philip Rivers. He was gutsy in that Monday night game, wasn't he? Brought him back. Gutsy. He's tough. Avoiding the pass rush, making the big throw, and then losing again, like he always does. I think the biggest overreaction we actually got from Monday was actually about the Minnesota Vikings versus the New Orleans Saints game. And it was basically just how good Minnesota Vikings quarterback Sam Bradford was. The Vikings beat the Saints 29-19 in the opener. And Sam Bradford threw for 346 yards and 3 touchdowns for the Vikings. Those are some elite numbers, aren't they? Hey, if Bradford plays like this, the Vikings are going to be Super Bowl contenders. Here's a clip from ESPN.
Mike Zimmer, Pat Shermer talking about the need for more explosive plays. They're getting them. Here's a very explosive play. It's a touchdown to Stephon Diggs.
Well, sure they are. But Sam Bradford isn't going to get to face the New Orleans Saints defense every week. The Saints are consistently one of the worst defenses in the league, and every year we hear how they signed a few free agents that are really going to change their defense, and then every year they continue to suck. They can change defensive coordinators, they can sign free agents, they can draft players on defense, they can offer bounties, they can pay players to hurt somebody. It makes no difference. It doesn't change. It never changes anything. The Saints defense is horrible. And so while I did actually like what I saw from Minnesota on Monday night, I want to see their running game get rolling. You know, a number of people in the sports media are even telling us how Sam Bradford was actually excellent last year too. He was the perfect fit for what the Vikings needed when Teddy Bridgewater went down. He only threw 5 interceptions. Well, yeah, but he also threw less touchdowns than Blake Bortles. Hey, the offensive line in Minnesota is not great. And so the Vikings are going to be facing teams with a much better pass rush than the New Orleans Saints. And when they do, they had better be able to run the ball. Because if you think you're going to ride the arm of Sam Bradford to the Super Bowl, yeah, I've got some oceanfront property in Colorado Springs that I can sell you. Our final overreaction is the overreaction that I heard that the Indianapolis Colts are going to be one of the worst teams in the NFL without Andrew Luck. On Sunday, the Los Angeles Rams pasted the Colts 46-9. And there was literally nothing to feel good about if you're a Colts fan. Rams quarterback Jared Goff, who we weren't even sure should be playing in this league, yeah, he threw for over 300 yards on that Colts defense. And then the Colts offense was even worse. Quarterback Scott Tolzien was horrible. He went 9 for 18 for 128 yards with 2 interceptions. So if you're scoring at home or alone, Scott Tolzien completed 9 passes to his own team. And then 2 to the other team. I know. I was told there would be no math in this, but let's see if we can't figure this out. So of the 11 passes that Tolzien threw that someone on the field actually caught, 18% of those passes were caught by the opposing team, not his own team. Yeah, that's not great. Oh, and by the way, I probably should have mentioned this part. Both of those interceptions, yeah, they got returned for touchdowns.
Man, that's just mean.
You know what? Yeah, that's my bad. I should have mentioned that before. So this is just an overreaction though, right? The Colts aren't that bad. No, I think this is actually an overreaction that's not that much of an overreaction.
Aww.
I think this is actually right. The Colts are terrible. If I'm Andrew Luck, I'd be showing up to work in a wheelchair. Hey guys, I'm not better. I'm not getting better. In fact, I was just in an accident. I'm actually a lot worse. I'm not going to get ready to play until you start bringing in some more talent. Yeah, it is bad in Indianapolis. That's not an overreaction, actually. The Colts are horrible. This team of Jim Irsay's is a complete and utter disaster. Of course, it couldn't happen to a better guy. Hey, coming back, we are going to be taking a look at what we may have learned from the second full week of college football. Plus, I will let you know what to expect in the Gennady Golovkin versus Canelo Alvarez fight. And we do have an NFL-themed Daily Dose Top 5. You do not want to miss that.
This is the story of Bill and Jen, who sold their home the easy way with Easy Property. They'd seen their dream home.
But we need to sell ours.
Luckily, they found Easy Property and booked a free valuation online. Then with a knock, they were visited by their local property professional.
Hello.
Who valued their home and explained the choice of packages from £295. And with the online dashboard, they could respond to offers.
We've got an offer.
That's another Easy Ever After. Find yours and book a free valuation with your local property professional at easyproperty.com.
Yeah, every time I go to get new body armor or some more drones, I always go to Amazon. But I don't just go to any Amazon. I go to rogueintel.com/Amazon. So this way I can help out my favorite podcast with every purchase I make. And I know I purchase a lot. Get to the chopper now!
Anime, comics, video games, and pop culture. These are but mere playthings for the manliest beings in all of podcasting history, the Powerful Nerdcast. hosted by the gurus of geekdom, Corey and Christian. Join them each week to discuss all things nerd culture, everything from Star Wars to Dragon Ball Z, and everything in between. Find the powerful Nerdcast on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network at rogueintel.com.
Table Reads with Sean McBee and Trevor Thompson.
Do you like podcasts?
Hate them. Hate them to death. Don't want to listen to another one ever again.
Good. Do you like movies?
Hate movies. If I could, I would just listen to music for the rest of my life.
Do you like hating things?
Hate liking things, and I like hating things. I especially like answering questions from people I hate, like you.
Well, do I have the thing for you?
I don't know, but I hope you don't.
I have a hateful podcast starring me and you, where we hate on movies that never got to be made.
Hate, 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 hate. We wrote scripts, and we didn't make it, so we're hating on these ones that didn't make it.
Experience the worst Hollywood has to offer with readings of the scripts you never wanted.
Well, that's because they're hateable.
Hate, 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 hate.
They're terrible.
Table Reads. Every Tuesday, right here on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network, or visit TableReadsPodcast.com.
Eight.
Of course, college football had another excellent weekend of really good matchups. Some top-ranked teams facing off against one another. And you know, college football, it's an odd sport, isn't it? It isn't like basketball or baseball or even hockey, where we see these teams play like 30, 40, 80, 100 times a season. Like, you know what you're getting there. You know what each team is capable of. College football isn't even like the NFL, where we may only see teams play 16 times, but at least we can gauge their competition. No, in college football, we're constantly trying to solve this mystery of who has what. We only see these teams 12 times, and really, we only see them face true competition, what, like 6, 7, maybe 8 times at the most? And so with that in mind, we have to try to learn things each and every week. And while injuries and a number of other dynamics can change throughout the season, here are a few things that we actually might have learned from this past weekend of college football. Here's a few things we've learned, at least so far. We're still trying to figure things out. We're still trying to learn more, but here's what we've learned so far. First thing I've learned, the Florida schools, they looked pretty average again this weekend. Do you realize that the combined record of these schools, Miami, Florida, Florida State, South Florida, Florida Atlantic, Central Florida, and Florida International is 5-5 right now? Now, this past weekend, you might think they didn't lose quite as much, considering most of their games were canceled for the hurricane. That actually wasn't the case. Florida schools went just 1-1 this week. With all of the talent in the state of Florida and all of the coaching talent in the state of Florida, why are these teams batting just .500 right now? And I know we're only 2 weeks in, but the worst part is that the big dogs, Florida and Florida State, they right now are looking the worst. Like, right now you're looking at Florida State going, I don't know. You guys have some really, really big problems because you've got really, really tough schedules. The Seminoles are now going to be starting a quarterback with zero experience. And Jim McElwain's offense at Florida, he has Gator fans remembering how high-powered the Will Muschamp offense was.
That ain't true!
And it was terrible. Might want to pick it up, state of Florida.
Florida? But that's America's way.
Something else we learned this past weekend. We learned the Oklahoma quarterback, Baker Mayfield. Yeah, he's still really, really good, even without Bob Stoops. On Saturday night, Baker Mayfield went 27-35 with 386 yards in the air and 4 touchdowns. The Sooners went into Columbus, and they trounced the Ohio State Buckeyes. 31-16, and it did not feel that close. The Sooners put up nearly 500 yards of offense. Oh, and my boy, Baker Mayfield, yeah, my pick to win the Heisman, he was outstanding. Looked really, really good. Kind of forget how good he is. I know he's been invited to the Heisman ceremony before. You kind of forget just how good Baker Mayfield is. You see him on Saturday night tearing up an Ohio State defense that was supposed to be pretty good. And you go, oh, yeah. Yeah, Baker Mayfield's pretty good. Oh, and we also learned that my boy Baker is still a bit of an idiot, didn't we? Did you see after the game when he ran out to midfield to jam the Oklahoma flag into the turf at Ohio State? Back at the horseshoe. Now, there's a number of people that are up in arms about him putting the flag at midfield. How dare you? How dare you do that? How dare you desecrate our stadium? I don't have any problem with him, I guess, doing it. You know the problem I have? It's like a synthetic turf surface. Baker, you can't stick a flag into that surface. It's not dirt, dummy.
Look here, you big dummy.
Like, you can't put a flag into that surface. So it tipped over and fell down. And, by the way, and I don't have a problem with him doing it, I guess, but that's probably going to come back and haunt him at some point, isn't it? So, yes, we learned that Baker Mayfield, hey, he's insanely talented on the football field. He's undersized, but, man, he's really, really good. And we also learned he's not really that bright.
Well, I could have told you that.
Actually, I don't know. Did we learn those things? We might have known both of those things already, didn't we? We learned in that same game that Ohio State, and I don't want to overreact on this, but Ohio State still doesn't have a great quarterback. JT Barrett, he struggles to spread the ball around. And while he is an amazing athlete, the Buckeyes have not been winning big games with him at the helm. They should have lost to Michigan last year. Then they did get blown out by Clemson in the playoff. And now they got blown out again this year by Oklahoma. I realize Barrett doesn't have a ton of weapons. But this was the season that the Buckeyes were pointing toward, wasn't it? Doesn't look so good right now. And I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if you just have to let him be an athlete and just let him run around, but he's not so good at throwing the ball down the field. He's not so good at spreading the ball around. Big problem for Ohio State. A few other things that we learned in college football this past week. We learned that the Georgia Bulldogs are probably going to lose to an unranked team after they celebrated like they won the national championship when they beat unranked Notre Dame. You know, we've made fun of Georgia over the past few seasons here on the Dose because they keep finding ways to lose games. On Saturday in South Bend, they actually found a way to get a road win against the Fighting Irish. But things are never quite that easy for Georgia, are they? Instead of just being like, hey, we won. We expect to beat unranked teams. In fact, we expect to beat ranked teams. We're really good. And Georgia is. They're very good. They've got a very, very good defense. They've got pretty good running backs. But instead, when they beat Notre Dame, they had to go to the sideline, dance around, dump Gatorade on everyone, taunt the Irish fans. Doesn't that just kind of reek of that time? That, remember when they actually scored a touchdown on Florida, and instead of just walking off the field, the entire roster came out and danced around like idiots? Like, I hate to point this out, but do you ever see Alabama go out and celebrate like this after they beat an unranked team? No. No, you don't. But this is why you're Georgia. This is the reason you can't have nice things. You beat a team that went like 4-8 last year.
What you want, a cookie?
We also learned that Clemson can just keep finding ways to win against ranked teams. Wasn't all that pretty. But the Clemson Tigers rode their nasty defense to beat number 13 Auburn 14-6. And over the past few seasons, we've kind of gotten used to seeing Deshaun Watson, high-powered offense, carry Clemson. On Saturday, they didn't have much offense. It was the Tigers' defense that held Auburn to just 117 total yards. They sacked Auburn quarterbacks 11 different times. Now, this is something that might shock you a little bit. Do you realize that the win for Clemson on Saturday was the sixth straight by Clemson against a ranked opponent?
What?
Like, it doesn't seem that long ago that we kind of made up this verb of Clemsoning. We're about to see if Clemson can win their seventh in a row. Clemson's just not going away. That defense is really, really good. And every time everyone kind of doubts Dabo Swinney, we kind of just look at it and go, man, I don't know. He just keeps getting it done. It's kind of like Nick Saban. Like, you're waiting for the other shoe to fall. Like, at some point, they got to drop off. Not yet. Doesn't seem like. Clemson just keeps winning. They've got a test coming up this weekend that we're going to talk about in just a few minutes. A few more things that we learned this past weekend in college football. We learned that Texas Christian just might be a whole lot better than anyone thought. You know, it's kind of easy to forget about the TCU Horned Frogs. I mean, they're in Texas. So right off the bat, there are other teams down there that come to mind when you think of Texas. I mean, you think of the Texas Longhorns, right? You think of Texas A&M. You think of the Baylor Rapists. Baptist. That's a Freudian slip. That's my bad. That's on me. Sorry. Plus, TCU is in the Big 12. So honestly, like, you kind of forget they even exist. But head coach Gary Patterson seems like he's good for a pretty good team every few seasons, and this could be one of those times. The Frogs whipped Arkansas 28-7 on Saturday, and the Razorbacks aren't like a high standard, but hey, TCU went into Fayetteville, and they handled them. In 2 weeks, TCU goes to Stillwater to face Oklahoma State. That might be a much better matchup than we originally thought it would be. And the interesting thing about TCU, this isn't a score 50 points, hope the opponent can't score 51 kind of team. That's not what this team does. Patterson has the Frogs playing pretty solid defense, which, as we all know, is kind of rare in the Big 12, isn't it? Keep an eye on TCU. They might be pretty good as we get going. We learned that David Cutcliffe still has a pretty good offense at Duke. If you aren't familiar with David Cutcliffe at Duke, you are familiar with his work. You just might not know it. He was the quarterback coach at Tennessee. Remember when they had that one guy, what's his name? Oh yeah, Peyton Manning. And then he was the offensive coordinator at Ole Miss when they had his little brother, Eli Manning. And in addition to those two guys, he's also coached some other players you might have heard of. Deuce McAllister, Jamal Lewis, James Stewart, Charlie Garner, Heath Shuler, Andy Kelly, T. Martin. And you might sit there and say, T. Martin? Who cares? What did T. Martin ever do in the NFL? Do you know where T. Martin's at now? He's out at USC, coaching the quarterback out there. He's doing a pretty good job with him. So David Cutcliffe obviously taught T. Martin something. Now, Cutcliffe is the head coach at Duke, and Duke has been pretty competitive since he got there. You know, he lost most of his team from last season, but the Duke Blue Devils are still scoring points. Right now, Duke is 2-0. They beat Northwestern pretty easily on Saturday, and they're averaging 50 points a game. Now, I don't think that Duke can hang with the big dogs like Miami or Florida State, but you got to say this, Cutcliffe has his group moving the football, so Duke could be a little bit better than people thought they were. I think everyone kind of expected them to be the bottom of their barrel in the ACC. They're a little bit better than that. We also learned, speaking of ACC football, we also learned that Lamar Jackson, yeah, he really wants another Heisman Trophy. You know, I told you in our Daily Dose College Football preview that Louisville quarterback Lamar Jackson isn't going to win the Heisman again this season. And I stand by that. But on Saturday against North Carolina, he was out to prove me wrong. Here's a clip from ESPN.
Well, that worked out pretty well with the guy they hired. Last I checked, Lamar Jackson slings it deep. Oh my goodness, what a pass! Touchdown, Jalen Smith! He made that.
The Cardinals beat the North Carolina Tar Heels 47-35 in Chapel Hill. And Lamar Jackson was excellent, going 25 of 39. He had 393 yards passing and 3 touchdowns. Oh, and he also ran the ball 19 times for 132 yards and another 3 touchdowns. On Saturday, Lamar Jackson had 525 yards and 6 touchdowns. Now, I still think it's going to be an uphill battle for him to win the Heisman. And honestly, for Louisville to do too much on the national scene. They just lost too many people, but man, Lamar Jackson is highly entertaining. He reminds me physically a little bit of Michael Vick in that everything he does, it just looks effortless. It just looks like he's gliding. He doesn't seem like he's running that hard, but somehow he's passing everyone. He flicks the ball, and it goes like 50 yards in the air. I don't know if Lamar Jackson's going to win the Heisman. I don't think he's going to, but wow, is he fun to watch. Last thing, that at least for me, that I learned this past weekend, we learned that USC is still very explosive. You know, after their first game against Western Michigan, I expected the Trojans to be in serious trouble against Stanford. USC allowed 31 points to Western Michigan. So what's going to happen when they play Stanford, a team that can line up and just go smash mouth on you? But on Saturday, USC's running game really got on track. They rushed for over 300 yards. They racked up over 600 total yards, and they just wore Stanford out. If you'd have told me one team is going to run the ball down the other's throat in this game, I would have said it was Stanford. That isn't what happened. They wore Stanford out. They manhandled Stanford, and it wasn't just the offense, and that was the biggest thing that I learned this week. The defense proved to be way tougher than anyone expected. They held that Stanford offense to just 170 yards passing. Now, I still have questions about the depth of the USC Trojans, but they definitely made a statement on Saturday. Hey, we all know Sam Darnold is great. We know that. He just approaches the game in a different way. Dude doesn't have a pulse. He's not a real fiery guy. He's not Baker Mayfield. He doesn't go out there and run around rallying the troops. No, he's just cool. He just goes in and he executes, doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. Love the way Sam Darnold carries himself. But the key with USC was he got a ton of help. We know he's good. What about the other people around him? Well, on Saturday, he got a lot of help. If that continues to happen, the Trojans are going to be a contender. Now we just get to see if they can keep that up. Not a great college football weekend coming up, but there are a few games that could be worth your time to watch. Again, not the big stellar matchups like we had this past weekend. Past weekend, very, very good. Couple of games that you might want to keep an eye out for. Here's one that might be a little bit sneaky. Air Force goes to Michigan. And no, I don't think they can hang with Michigan. Michigan impressed me a little bit. Not so much with their skill position guys, but just the way they play in the trenches. Offensive and defensive lines, pretty impressive to me for Michigan so far. But we know Air Force runs that goofy little wishbone triple option kind of offense. Could the Air Force offense make this game at least interesting? No, probably not. Aww. Okay, let's go to a different game. Number 23 Tennessee goes to number 24 Florida, and we get to see if Florida can figure out how to play any semblance of offense. They tried starting a freshman at quarterback, didn't look so good. They went to the transfer, didn't look so good. Bottom line, Florida's offense doesn't look so good. Can they get on track against Tennessee? Yeah, probably not. Aww. Let's try to find a different game. This won't be big nationally, but Colorado State goes to number one Alabama. Okay. Colorado State has been okay so far. They beat Oregon State. They got beat by Colorado. I think they beat someone this last week. I don't know. Can Colorado State keep the Crimson Tide under 70 points? Again, probably not. Aww. I'm starting to sense a little bit of a trend here on all these college football games coming up. Are you? Here's another game. Number 17, Miami goes to number 11, Florida State. That's a pretty good matchup. Can the Seminoles overcome the loss of their starting quarterback, DeAndre Francois? Remember they lost him in that first game against Alabama. Could they overcome that loss, somehow give a good game to Miami and beat them? Yeah, probably not. I'd say no. I think Miami can handle Florida State. Okay, the big dog game of the week. We talked about it earlier just a little bit. Number 3 Clemson gets to try to hold up that streak of beating ranked teams. They go to number 14 Louisville. Can Lamar Jackson elevate his team and beat the defending champs? Yeah, I think you kind of know where I'm going this week, don't you? Again, probably not. Okay, let's take a look at that Canelo Alvarez versus Gennady Golovkin fight. On Saturday night, we are going to have the most compelling boxing match that I can think of, at least in recent history. Look, we all know that the sport of boxing is a mess. It's run by shady people. And you don't need to look any further than that circus of a fight just a few weeks ago between Floyd Mayweather and a martial arts guy that had never fought a professional boxing match just to see how corrupt this sport truly is. But I want to say this. When boxing is good, it's really, really good. It's really, really fun. It's extremely exciting. Now, if you're a young person, and I know that we do have some young people listen to this show, but if you're a young person, I feel bad for you, in a lot of ways, but specifically as it pertains to boxing. You haven't had much to choose from when you look back at great fights in your era. The biggest fight in your lifetime, if you're a young person, was probably Mayweather versus Pacquiao, which sounds better than it was because it was about 5 years too late. And it was actually less interesting than watching, I don't know, like the Major League Baseball draft. However, if you're a little bit older, and I know that we have people of all ages that listen to the Daily Dose, if you're a little bit older, you remember some of the great fights in boxing history. You might remember Ali versus Frazier. Maybe you remember Ali versus Foreman. Maybe you remember Sugar Ray Leonard versus Roberto Duran, or Alexis Arguello versus Aaron Pryor. Phenomenal fight. Maybe you remember Mike Tyson versus Spinks. Maybe you remember Morales versus Barrera. Riddick Bowe versus Evander Holyfield, Hagler versus Hearns, Gotti versus Ward. If you're hearing those fights and you're going, I have no idea what you're talking about right now, I encourage you, go look these fights up on YouTube. You will be highly entertained. And here's the thing, on Saturday night, this fight has a chance, maybe, to be as iconic as some of those fights were. Because some of those fights were excellent fights, and I can only go back so far. Like, I can't go back to the Tony Zale or Marciano.
Rocky Montana! Rocky Montana!
Or Sugar Ray Robinson or Joe Lewis. I can't go back that far, but some of the fights here, I remember them. I remember where I was when I watched them. I remember how exciting they were, and I'm hoping that on Saturday nights, we have a chance to see a fight of that nature, that good, that entertaining. Let's take a look at this fight. You know, we all remember Canelo Alvarez, tough fighter, kid from Mexico, but we all remember him from when he lost that big fight to Floyd Mayweather, don't we? He was rated the number one light middleweight at the time, and he was one of the top pound-for-pound fighters in the world, despite the fact he was only 23 years old when he fought Floyd Mayweather. And he gave Floyd, I guess, a fight. He went the distance. He just wasn't experienced enough to fight such a slick fighter. But do not sleep on Canelo Alvarez, because since he lost to Mayweather, he's matured a lot as a fighter. He moved up to 155. I think that was more comfortable for him. And think of some of the guys he's beaten. He beat James Kirkland. He beat Miguel Cotto. He knocked Amir Khan out cold.
You sap a man's confidence with body shots, as well as taking away his energy. And everybody...
Oh! Right hand shot by Canelo. And Kenny Bayless is stopping the fight. And Canelo Alvarez is the first one there. Canelo Alvarez may have knocked Khan cold with that shot.
He did. The danger from a shot like that is not only the punch on the chin that short-circuited Khan's legs, it's the fact that the back of his head smacks off the canvas, which is the cause for concern.
And then he had that grudge match with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., and he just took him apart. He gave him a vicious beating. Like, they had some words throughout the pre-fight stuff. They were kind of talking. It was kind of going back and forth. And you could see Alvarez went into that fight against Chavez Jr. and just said, yeah, I'm going to beat you. And he beat him badly. The key for Canelo on Saturday night is going to be his ability to use that speed that he has and the combinations he has. He is a very, very good boxer. He has developed into a much better boxer than he was. And hey, Gennady Golovkin has been hittable in his last few fights. Canelo could be able to outbox him, could land a few combinations. Maybe he racks up some points. Maybe he wins some rounds. Don't underestimate his power. Amir Khan underestimated his power, and he's just starting to wake up like now. Here's the other side. Canelo Alvarez can take a pretty good punch. He's proven to be especially good at dealing with body blows. Canelo may go 12 rounds with Gennady. It won't surprise me a bit if he does. And if he goes 12 rounds with Gennady Golovkin, he's going to have a chance to win this fight. If it goes the distance, he's a good enough, a slick enough boxer now, he may be up on points. On the other side, we have Gennady Golovkin. Of course, very talented fighter from Kazakhstan. He is 37-0, and Triple G is a shark. He tracks down opponents. He smothers you. He hits very, very accurately, and he hits very hard. Now, the rumor, and what you'll hear in boxing circles, is that Triple G might be on the downside of his career. I'm not exactly sure what to believe. Like, I've heard that. I understand that. I'm not sure exactly if I should believe that or not. Because he's 35 years old. He's getting older. Usually, though, the fighters that age more significantly are the guys that just rely on their speed. He's not so much a speed guy. He's a power guy, and he's a very accurate puncher. But, like I said, the rumor is out there that he could be on the downside of his career, because here's the thing. We've seen his last few fights, him being less and less dominant. Think about this for a second. He fought Marco Rubio, destroyed him in 2 rounds.
He talks not only of his Mexican style, Golovkin, but of his predator instinct, and you can see it there. He's always looking to attack and to hurt.
Rubio working to the body, getting in a couple of good shots. Golovkin comes back to the body and gets in a better shot.
Oh, good uppercut.
Hard uppercut by Golovkin. Momentarily wobbled Rubio. Now he's got him pinned against the ropes.
And see how he varies here.
Predator at work. Down goes Rubio.
Touch, touch, touch. Smash.
Cinco. Left hook smash. Siete. Ocho. Nueve. Diez. Second round knockout.
No one would give him a title fight. Everyone ducked him. He took out Willie Monroe and David Lemieux in less than 9 rounds each. Still, no one would give him a title shot. He crushed Dominic Wade in two rounds. He shattered Kell Brooks' face, literally. Finally, he got a small-time title shot with Daniel Jacobs. It went all 12 rounds. So people are saying, hey, progressively, as he gets into better competition, he's wearing down. And he does take some punches. People have hit Gennady Golovkin. Here's the downside. His head seems like it might be made of granite. It doesn't seem like it phases him. Couple of guys. Kell Brook landed some big punches. Jacobs landed some big punches on Triple G. Didn't bother him. He just keeps coming. So you can find him. I just don't know if you can hurt him. And again, Gennady Golovkin is a shark. He keeps coming and he keeps coming and he keeps coming. And if Canelo Alvarez slips up at all, Golovkin's going to attack him and there's going to be a feeding frenzy. Now, as far as my pick, I'm looking for a really close fight. I think this will be a closer fight than some people might think. I think Canelo is going to frustrate Golovkin with his boxing skills, with his counter-punching ability. I think he's going to win rounds. I think he's going to win rounds with his boxing skills. But I think Gennady Golovkin will keep coming, and I think he'll eventually wear him out. Do not underestimate this one key fact. Canelo Alvarez has been avoiding this fight for a while now. Like I said, all these fights that I named of Gennady's, after each fight, he'd say, hey, I want Canelo. Canelo'd say, oh yeah, I'll fight him. I'm not afraid of him. I'll fight him anytime. Who are you going to fight next? Not him. Don't forget that he's been avoiding that fight. That tells me he might be a little bit worried about Triple G. And you know what? I think he should be. Because I think Gennady Golovkin is going to end up knocking him out. I think it'll be a good fight. I think it'll be a quality fight that maybe goes 8, 9, 10 rounds. If it goes 12 rounds, I give Canelo a chance to win it. I just think Gennady Golovkin is going to track him down and end it a little bit early. We'll keep you up to date on that. We're going to be trying something a little bit different next week with our post-fight coverage here on the Daily Dose. You're going to have to make sure that you tune in for that. Hey, our Daily Dose Top 5 is coming up next. You never want to miss that. So we finished the opening week of the NFL season. Does it mean anything? I know we discussed some of the overreactions that we've already heard this year. And you know, it isn't the first time that we've gotten too high or too low after week one.
This is the story of Bill and Jen, who sold their home the easy way with Easy Property. They'd seen their dream home.
But we need to sell ours.
Luckily, they found Easy Property and booked a free valuation online. Then with a knock, they were visited by their local property professional.
Hello.
Who valued their home and explained the choice of packages from £295. And with the online dashboard, they could respond to offers.
We've got an offer.
That's another Easy Ever After. Find yours and book a free valuation with your local property professional at easyproperty.com.
Just a quick reminder, be sure that you head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose and do any shopping that you might need to do right there. You know, Loot Crate offers an amazing range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. If you like fashion, try Loot Wear, or you could get a bigger crate with Loot DX. And if you want to geek out your pet, you can even go order the Loot Pets Crate. September's Loot Crate theme is called Robotic, and it features items from Blade Runner, Aliens, Star Wars, and Star Trek. If you're on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate has it. Loot Crate has pretty much any kind of merchandise you can think of, and it is quality, licensed memorabilia. You can order a single crate, you can order a subscription of crates, or you can just order individual items. And you can always go back and order past crates or past items. The best part about ordering from Loot Crate, when you place your order at checkout, just put Daily Dose, D-A-L-Y-D-O-S-E, in the coupon box. We will get you 10% off of your order. Now, if you'd like to recommend the podcast, we would appreciate that so much. Please just let your friends, your family, your coworkers know. They can subscribe to the podcast wherever fine podcasts are hosted. You can go to iTunes. You can pretty much go to anywhere that has podcasts. Stitcher, Google Play, Podcast Republic, Audio Boom, you name it, they've all got the Daily Dose. Of course, blogtalkradio.com has every single episode that we've done. And if you'd like to share the show with a friend, just click that share button wherever it is that you listen, and you can send them a direct link to the show. Plus, you know, if they're technically challenged, they don't quite understand this whole newfangled podcast thing, make it a little bit easier for someone else to listen to. Also, make sure that you stop by our podcast network page, rogueintel.com. The Daily Dose, of course, is a proud member of the Rogue Intel Podcast Network, and they've got a number of other podcasts over on Rogue Intel that you're going to like. And it's not a network of sports shows. They've got a number of other podcasts over there you're going to like, you're going to get addicted to. Go check out a few of the other podcasts that are up over at rogueintel.com. Rogue.com. Now, as we do every single week, we have got to get to a very popular segment of the show here on the Daily Dose, the Daily Dose Top 5. So week one of the NFL is in the books. Maybe your favorite team lost. Are they out of it? No, not really. In fact, some of the more memorable teams in Super Bowl history have actually lost the first game of their season. But we do, like we talked about, tend to overreact a little bit to week one. Hey, when it's all we have, when it's the only thing we have to talk about, we only have 1 week to talk about, we probably dissect it just a little too much, don't we? You might be 0-1, but it doesn't doom your season. Unless you're like the Indianapolis Colts or the New York Jets. Then your season probably is over. But today on the show, with all of those things in mind, we count down the Daily Dose top five bad starts to what ended up being a Super Bowl season. Number five on our list.
Five.
You know, we all remember that the Green Bay Packers won the first two Super Bowls in history behind Bart Starr, Paul Hornung, Ray Nitschke, Jim Taylor. But do you realize after winning Super Bowl I, they returned in 1967 and they got off to a pretty average start. In week one, the Green Bay Packers faced the Detroit Lions. And the Lions somehow tied the defending champs 17-17 behind quarterback Milt Plum. And of course, an interception return from Lem Barney, he took it back for a touchdown, got the tie for the Lions. But the Green Bay Packers regrouped, they went 9-4 the rest of the way, and they rolled to their second Super Bowl, beating the Oakland Raiders in Super Bowl II. You don't remember that start to the season, do you? Can you imagine, like now, you win the Super Bowl, you come back, you get tied the next year. What's wrong with them? And it wasn't like that Lions team was great. We'd be all over that. There'd be all kinds of hot takes. What's wrong with Bart Starr? Should Bart Starr retire? No, just calm down. It's a long year. Number four on our list of bad starts to a Super Bowl season. You know, in 1986, the New York Giants went 14-2. They had quarterback Phil Simms. He ran a very efficient offense. Ball just did not touch the ground. He was highly efficient with his passing. They had a strong running game. And then, of course, on the other side, you had Lawrence Taylor and that dominating New York Giants defense. The Giants, of course, in 1986, beat my Denver Broncos 39-20 in Super Bowl 21. But you might not remember that the Giants actually started off that season with a last-second loss to the Danny White-led Dallas Cowboys. Herschel Walker scored a late touchdown and got the Cowboys the win 31-28. The Cowboys would end up going 7-9, but the Giants would reel off 12 wins in a row. They closed out the season with that Super Bowl victory over the Broncos. Do you remember that they lost the first game? No, no, you don't. They went on and won a Super Bowl. Can't get too high, you can't get too low after week one. Number three on our list. The Giants are going to make our list again at number three, but this was a completely different era. Gone was Phil Simms. Gone was Joe Morris. Gone was Mark Bavaro, Lawrence Taylor, Harry Carson, all those guys. This was that Eli Manning team that beat the New England Patriots, not the first time when they ruined the Patriots' perfect season. This was the second time in the Super Bowl. And this group in 2011, the Giants went just 9-7, but they got hot in the postseason and they won another title. But we kind of forget that in their season opener, the Giants lost 28-14 to a Washington Redskins team led by, yes, you guessed it, Rex Grossman. Rex Grossman actually threw for over 300 yards and two touchdowns. But it was kind of the highlight of Washington's year. They ended up going just 5-11 for the season. But hey, that opening game, it was fun while it lasted, wasn't it, Washington? You beat the Giants? Yes, we're going to have a great year. And then you won just four more times. Meanwhile, the Giants went on and won another Super Bowl. That comes in at number three. Number two on our top five list. So the Dallas Cowboys had won the Super Bowl in 1992. Remember, they beat the Buffalo Bills 52-17. And they returned most of that roster in 1993. They had Troy Aikman. Emmitt Smith was kind of having some contract issues, but they had Michael Irvin. They had that tenacious defense. It's just going to be more of the same in 1993, isn't it? Not in week one. The Dallas Cowboys got pounded 35-16 in their opener at Washington. Mark Rippon threw three touchdowns and running back Brian Mitchell ran for 116 yards and two scores. The Cowboys then lost again in week two to Buffalo, who they had beaten the Super Bowl. Oh, and then they went 12-2 the rest of the way and won the Super Bowl again. Washington, meanwhile, went 4-12 and made all of us wonder, how in the world did they win? Like, how did they beat that team? I don't know. But weird things happen in the NFL, and anything can happen from week to week. So what could be number one on our list of eventual Super Bowl winners that got off to a terrible week one start? Well, it just might be a team that got off to another bad start this season. Because back in 2003, the New England Patriots went 14-2. They beat the Carolina Panthers in Super Bowl 38. Of course, Bill Belichick, maybe his best team ever. He had Tom Brady, Deion Branch, Antoine Smith, Troy Brown, David Givens. Remember the tight ends he had, Daniel Graham and Christian Fourier? This team was loaded. Except that in week one, they didn't just get beat. They got smacked. The Buffalo Bills whipped the Patriots 31-0 in the season opener. Bills quarterback Drew Bledsoe beat his former protege Tom Brady. Running back Travis Henry rushed for 89 yards and had two touchdowns. Probably had a few more kids. And former Patriots safety Lawyer Malloy got sweet revenge on Belichick, because remember that the Patriots had refused to re-sign him, so he went over to Buffalo instead. The Bills were going to be a power to contend with Bledsoe and Malloy and Travis Henry. And the Patriots had huge problems. Oh, Belichick shouldn't have got rid of Malloy. Oh, Belichick probably kept the wrong quarterback. Any of that stuff sound familiar? Patriots have huge problems? Yeah, except the Patriots got rolling, and they closed the season on a 15-game winning streak. Oh, and those Buffalo Bills, yeah, they went 6-10 and missed the playoffs like they've done every single year since, I don't know, Doug Flutie. I know we get all excited about a big win in week one. Or sometimes we start digging an early grave after a tough loss in week one. But the NFL season, it is nothing if it is not long. There are going to be twists and turns all season. And as much as we tend to make out of the season opener, we might just overreact a tiny bit. There's a lot of football to still be played, and that, my friends, is a very, very good thing. Hey, next week on the show, I am trying to put something together a little bit different, something we've never done here on The Dose. Do not miss it. Hopefully, it'll be something kind of cool. We will be discussing the Golovkin versus Canelo fight, and we are going to try to do it in a different way than anything we've ever done. Hey, we will be looking at the latest and greatest in the NFL and college football, and we might, if we have time, have to check in on how Major League Baseball is shaping up. Plus, of course, we will have our Daily Dose Top 5. You know that you've got to tune in for that. I have to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening today. We are so glad to have you join us each week. Thank you for recommending the show to your friends. Thank you for your texts. Thank you for your emails. Thank you for listening. It is all very much appreciated. Hey, we'd love to hear from you. Feel free to contact us with what's on your mind. You can email us at dailydosesports@gmail.com, or you can find us over on Facebook or Twitter and send us a message there. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without all of you. I will see you all next week.
This is the story of Hannah, who sold her first home the easy way with Easy Property. She was worried selling might be complex, but when she booked a free valuation with Fred, her local property professional, he explained the choice of packages starting from £295.
It's easy.
In no time, she'd sold.
Cheers, Fred.
That's another easy ever after. Book a free valuation at easyproperty.com.